You are Locked On MLB. Your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans. Welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast. We talk about all of Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. On today's episode, which is being dropped on the 26th day of January, 2021, I'm going to be playing my conversation with my friend from north of the border, who is Mike, the creator of Baseball History Nut, which is one of the single best Twitter feeds you will find if you're a baseball fan. This show is available on the free and easy-to-use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available where all your podcasts are found. And when you're staying at home during these interesting times, be sure to tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball and the brand new Locked On Today. You can follow us on the Twitter, I just felt very old when I called it the Twitter, at Locked On MLB Pod. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. So here's what's going to happen. Later today, we're going to have the announcement of the Hall of Fame vote, and I'm going to be dropping a bonus episode later today where we're going to be, well, part one of the show, I'm going to be giving my predictions of what's going to happen in the Hall of Fame vote, and part two of the show, we will be hearing what actually happened. I'm going to be dropping that later today, so you get a little bonus episode, but I want to drop this one, which I was originally going to drop this episode last week, but I want to have it now because it's a good, solid, fun conversation between two people who are both rabid baseball fans. Mike, who created the Baseball History I guess it's a Twitter handle is what we're going to be calling Baseball History Nut. It's at nut_history. I've been following him for a while. I've been retweeting him for a while. He's a absolutely incredibly knowledgeable baseball historian who posts wonderful pictures and facts on the site. He's younger than me, and he lives north of the border in, I believe he said he's in Ontario, but he's right outside of Montreal. And is a French-Canadian friend of ours. And, well, I want to just say the Zoom feed that I had when we had our conversation got a little bit wonky, and sadly the beginning of our conversation got garbled. And there are a couple points you're going to hear a little bit of interference. That was completely my fault on my end of the Zoom. But I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation that I had with Mike, the creator of Baseball History Nut.
So I'm about, I'm in Ontario, so about an hour and a half east of Montreal.
Okay. I've only been to Montreal once, and I went there to see an Expos game back in 1995.
And oh, nice. I was there around that time, too, at Olympic Stadium.
You know what? There were so few people there, I think I remember you.
A funny enough story is that I went there as a in sixth grade in a school trip, and we did Expos games, and I'll always remember this. They were playing the Phillies, and we were at BP, and I most of my classmates didn't know the players and whatnot, but I started knowing the names at an early age, and Jose Mesa was in the outfield soft tossing with a teammate, I forget whom, and I screamed, "Hey Jose, can you give me a ball?" And he threw me a ball. So my first ever game ever, I got a ball from Jose Mesa in batting practice. So
wow.
I fell in love with players ever since then. So,
You know, the Expos were always one of my favorite teams. And I so want there to be baseball back in Montreal. I think it can survive in Montreal. I think it could work. I think too many things, there were too many factors working against the Expos by the middle of the 1990s. But that's a whole generation ago.
Yeah, I mean, for sure.
I mean, think that the Expos left in 2000 after the 04 season. And I mean, that's 17 years ago. I mean, a lot has changed. And the fact that, I mean, I remember when I was living in the San Francisco Bay Area in the late 80s, early 90s, even though the Giants were quite good, they couldn't draw because the stadium was so awful. And it was just a given that the Giants were going to go. And if you had told me that the Giants were going to have a perfect ballpark and be the model franchise and winning all these titles and be popular even when they're bad, I would have said you're out of your mind. And I think there's a there is, especially because there has been a removal of the squad that the Expos were. I think that Montreal could support a team and should, if I think baseball needs to expand by two anyway. This is the longest we've gone with an expansion since the first one. I have no doubt that Montreal would be a success.
I think so too. I think first off, they need a new stadium because Olympic Stadium is pretty much falling apart, but I don't think that would be an issue down the road. And I think that with brand new ownership back in the days when they were doing well and then the strike happened, Jeffrey Loria was the owner and we all know what type of owner he is. He sold all his assets and everything. And then ever since then, the participation, people gave up on them just because they didn't think that the owners or anyone else actually cared about the Expos. So the love just became just all hockey or the Alouettes down there and CFL football. And then when they left, I think that a few years after they left, then Montreal started to get that itch again to get a baseball team. I think Montreal is a really great baseball city. They've shown that in the 80s with Tim Raines, Andre Dawson, back in those days when they were really playing well, or even prior to that.
Yeah, people forget the late 70s, early 80s, when those were probably one of the most talented squads that didn't win a pennant, when they would have like Gary Carter and Dawson and Ellis Valentine and Steve Rogers. They drew huge crowds.
Yeah. And then we still all hate Rick Monday, though, so we won't talk about that.
I will not bring that up. I met Rick Monday's, like, I think it was his nephew. The two of us were on an airplane. He said, "You're a baseball fan." I said, "Oh, my uncle used to play for the Dodgers." I said, "Really?" I said, "What was his name?" He said, "Rick Monday." And all of a sudden, I just kept looking around. I hope no one from Quebec is here. No one from Quebec is on this plane.
That's good, man.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, look at, I went there. I mean, it's such a great city. And Montreal is such a beautiful city. And it is, you know, I think that I have what's called the rule of seven. I don't know if you've heard this on the podcast, but I call it the rule of seven. And that is, you don't really have your first concrete memories of a sports team or of sporting events until you're around 7 years old. Like, you may have vague memories here or there, but by the time you're seven is when you have your first favorite player, you remember your first World Series or whatever. Well, if you use the rule of seven with Montreal fans, any Montreal fan younger than 24 years old has no real memory of the Expos.
No real
memory of the pain. And so it would be nothing but positivity. If a team returns, whether it's an expansion team or the Rays wind up moving there. So I'm just all for it. I just want it. Let's make it happen. Listen to my buddy, Mike.
I agree.
In New York, we can run the team. I'll be happy to.
Yes, I'd be happy too. I have some great ideas. Maybe not like Bill Vec, but I have some great ideas.
We'll get right into it.
Actually, the baseball has been a passion of mine for a really long time. So I've actually started watching baseball in 93. So like you said, the 7 year rule. So my first vague memory is Joe Carter hitting that walk-off home run against the Phillies. And so ever since then, I've been watching baseball, but it's not till like about the early 2000s when the internet started to become the big thing and where I started to do my research. So the first player that I really fell in love with was Babe Ruth, which is obvious for many reasons, but I was watching the movie Sandlot and they spoke about him and I was just intrigued. So I decided to do some research on him online and everything. And I started finding like old articles on him and even newspaper archives from the early 1920s. And I just got enamored by him. I fell in love with him. I fell in love with the way he just dominated the sport compared to anyone else, even his cruising outside, his nightlife and everything. So I started doing more research on him. And then after that, I started to learn about more players. Ty Cobb and Lefty Grover, Christy Mathison, John McGraw and everything. So I kept searching on the internet and everything. And then after a while, when I start to get more funds and having a job and everything, I start to actually buy books and anything to do with 1920s, 1910s, 1930s. I bought like everything I could find. Didn't matter the price. Even bought a Ben Johnson book, who's the former Arrow president who started it all. The book was $140.
He took on the National League when he created the American League in the early 1900s.
Yes. So I wanted to do research on him because there wasn't much available. So I read a book on him. I asked the great John Thorne if he had any recommendations. And he's the one that recommended me that book and everything. And now I'm up to 90 books in my collection. And even though my fiance thinks I have too much, I tell her that never enough books, never. There's so much history. Nope. It's so good. And you'll always learn something.
I'm a voracious reader of baseball stuff, not just because I'm working on my 1972 baseball project now.
Nice.
But I'm reading a book right now called The Grand Old Man of Baseball, which is about Connie Mack as he was starting to lose control of the Philadelphia A's, because I'm fascinated by what happened. What happened to the A's? Like, they were the team of Philadelphia, and they wound up moving, and the Phillies, who were a laughable franchise, wound up staying. And I'm always fascinated by those moments in history. And I also, I read an entire book about the 1925 Pirates, who were the first team to come back from a 3-1 deficit in the World Series, and whose Game 7, when they won that Game 7 against the Washington Senators, it was pouring rain. They should have called the game, and Commissioner Landis almost called the game in the 7th, which would have awarded the World Series to Washington. And instead said, "Oh, let's play through it," and the Pirates rallied to win. And I love reading about those moments and those what ifs and everything. But it's so funny. Babe Ruth is like, how do I say it? He's almost like Paul Bunyan. You have to be reminded that he was a real person, because his story reads like a superhero story. He has an origin story. He has, you know, in the St. Mary's, what was it, the St. Mary's Reform School in Baltimore.
Yes, in Baltimore, yeah.
Yeah, and he is like a gateway drug into learning about baseball history. I want to tell you this quick thing, Mike, that we talked about how I lived in Geneva when I was a kid, and we couldn't watch baseball on TV there. And before we moved to Switzerland, my mom had a whole bunch of baseball books that she had when she was a little girl. And they were all from like the 40s and 50s and some from the early 60s. And so I, at age 8, 9, 10 years old, had all these books about baseball. And I had the baseball encyclopedia, but it ended in 1956. It was the 1956 edition. And so I couldn't watch baseball. So I just consumed all these books about baseball. And so I was like you, that I just the more I read, the more I wanted to know. And it became, but one of the first books that I read was the ghostwritten autobiography of Babe Ruth. And that's one of the, Babe Ruth was for both of us the gateway drug into loving baseball history.
Till this day, like, he died in 1948, and many people still, even with the advanced stats, many people still consider him the greatest of all time. They played in insane type of stadiums. They traveled by train. They played double the headers in the heat and the sun. They didn't have the training that they do have today, not the nutrition that they have today. So yes, I agree that they might not have the pitching. But today, players, and I'm not taking anything away from players from today's game. I respect Mike Trout and all those guys. And I've always been old school, so I'll always defend the old players from the 1920s. But they didn't have scouting report like they do today. If they got a Charlie horse, they put some cream hoping it would work and everything. So, like, they didn't have the advantage that players today. But I still think if you brought Babe Ruth in today's game and have him proper nutrition, not change much about any swing, because, you know, even though people think his uppercut swing wouldn't succeed today, I totally disagree with you, with them. But I still think he would succeed, and I still think he would be hitting 50 home runs this year and whatnot. So,
well, here's one other thing that is always there for any discussion with Babe Ruth, and that is he was also one of the best left-handed pitchers in the American League at one point.
Yeah, he started off his career with the Red Sox as a pitcher, and then a couple of years later, the owner wants more money for his play, so he decided to sell his prized possession, and New York were happy ever since.
All right, let me ask you a hypothetical question here. Let's say I could bend time and space.
Okay.
This is actually something more from my perspective, because I'm fascinated by stadiums. I love going to ballparks, but I also love going to where ballparks used to be. That's okay. My father and I, when we used to go on our baseball trips, used to love going. We went to Jarry Park when we were in Montreal. Nice. I'm in LA right now, and I like to go to the site of where old Wrigley Field, Los Angeles, used to be. That's where the Angels played.
Not to interrupt you, but it's so funny. When I post a picture of Wrigley Field in L.A., many people will correct me in saying Wrigley Field's in Chicago. I'm like, nope. Let you know, there was a Wrigley Field back in the day that was played in Los Angeles. It's quite
funny. Not only that, everyone has seen it, because if you watched any baseball movie made in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, they always shot there. If you could go back and go to any all-time stadium and see a player play in their prime, I'm guessing you, and let's take Ruth off the table, okay? Because I think you and I would both say Ruth. So taking Ruth off the table, who would you want to see in their prime, and where would you want to see it?
Okay, that's tough.
Yeah.
I'll name you five players, if that's okay.
Fair enough. Okay, that was an unfair question to sandbag you with, so.
So Walter Johnson at Griffin Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
I'd watch him there. Lou Gehrig at Polo Grounds or Yankee Stadium. I'd watch Mickey Mantle at Yankee Stadium just to see the torque in his hips and whatnot. I'd see Nap LaJoie at League Park.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd probably see late Ty Cobb at Shry Park.
Yeah, all good ones. I mean, obviously part of me would want to go see, you know, some of the Negro League legends who are just sort of, you know, like, I would love to see, was Satchel Paige as great a pitcher as he was, you know, like in terms of seeing him in his prime, or Gibson. In terms of the major leagues, I just finished reading the biography of Roberto Clemente. So I'm right now a little buzzed about Clemente, but I also am in love with everything I've seen about Forbes Field. Forbes Field just looks like it was this immaculately beautiful ballpark. And so
especially with the cathedral just beside it there.
And they have, like, you know, I've been to that site in Pittsburgh, and they have straightaway center field wall is still there, and they have where home plate was is in the student union at the university there. So I would love to have seen Clemente, like, when he was healthy, winning batting titles, throwing people out from right field. And like everyone who grew up watching Clemente said, you never got the whole story from the stats. It's you had to watch him play. My dad, by the way, is he grew up a rabid New York Giant fan. So out of tribute to my father, I would love to have gone to the Polo Grounds and seen Willie Mays play in his prime. Dizzy Dean is one, because I've read so much about Dizzy Dean, and he's such an amazing character that I would love to see.
From what I read, he wanted to be like Ruth off the field. He loved the shenanigans, and he loved to be a prankster and jokester. But when it came to getting the job done on the mound, he got it done. So he wanted to be labeled, and he wanted to be a star, and he respected Ruth, and he wanted to be the next Babe Ruth from what I read in the past.
And from what I understood, and I'm here in Los Angeles right now, from what I've understood about the people who watched Sandy Koufax pitch, that it was like an event, that he was so dominant. And my favorite player of all time, who was an Expo for a while as well, was Pedro Martinez. And I always loved Pedro days. And so the idea that there may be someone that would be like Pedro. So that would, those would be, did I say five there? I said Forbes Field. I said
Polo Grounds.
I said Sportsman's Park. I wanted to see Dizzy Dean. I wanted to see Sandy Koufax. And I will say, yeah, I guess, I definitely want to see like the classic. Oh, what am I talking about? Growing up in New England, I want to watch Ted Williams. I want to see Ted Williams. I've been in the park, but I wanted to see Ted Williams swing. So there you go. Yeah. That's me trying to get too cute. I go, Ted Williams.
I've been to Fenway Park. I went to see their two games, and it was just, I was in awe. And just when I go to old ballparks like that, I've always think about the people that went through that tunnel. It just freezes me up and just fascinating. All the guys here that one played of the in things, there is just.
Yeah, one of the things that I've said on this podcast and other places is that the timelessness of baseball has the illusion that the past, present, and future are all kind of happening simultaneously, that it's never really dead. And it's an illusion, of course, but it's a wonderful illusion. It's like, it is like believing in Santa, that you know it's not real, but it's fun to believe in. Yeah. And that when you go to some of those places, you can feel the memories happening. You can sort of picture them replaying in your head. Your site is basically the living illustration of what the timelessness of baseball would be, which is why I think anybody who's a baseball fan, no matter what age you are, no matter what level you are, go to Twitter right now, go to @nuts_history, and you've got about 27,000 followers, including the great John Thorne. But if you're a baseball fan, you're going to fall in love with it. And what I love is that when you can put the little thing that's, marks where you are in the world, yours just says Polo Grounds. And that makes me very happy.
Yeah. Funny enough is that I started this account maybe 2 years ago, and I never thought it would take off like it did. And then I just started posting pictures, and then I got good feedback. I've always had massive knowledge of where I can find pictures or videos and whatnot. I never thought that would be an issue or anything like that. But I never, till this day, never thought that in 2 years I would be close to 30,000 followers or get the interactions I've got. Got quote tweeted by Jimmy Fallon one time. And just, there's a lot of blue check marks that I'm just shocked that retweet my stuff or quote tweet my stuff. It's overwhelming, but in a good way. But one thing I really love about this site is that I do bring a smile to some people, bring back old memories. Sometimes people send me a direct message saying, thank you so much. I showed this picture to my dad. It brought back old memories. He started crying or stuff like that. That's why I do it. Yes, I have a passion for baseball history, but it's not mostly for me. I've seen these pictures. I can easily just look at them myself, but I want to share them with people to brighten them their day. Today, we live in a world where a lot of things is happening and not a lot of it is good stuff. So if I can brighten someone's day, then it makes me really happy.
Well, I can't tell you how many days you've brightened up on my part. And you probably notice because I keep retweeting your stuff. So
I do appreciate it. It doesn't matter if you have one follower, 100,000 followers, you like my stuff or anything, I'll always be thankful. That's one thing that I make sure to tell everyone. Every week or every 2 weeks, I'll send a thank you message because I'm so grateful for the people. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for them. So I appreciate it.
Well, everyone, please follow his account and you'll have a great time. If you're a baseball fan, if you subscribe to my podcast here, I know you're a baseball fan. So Mike from Nut_History, or as the site is called, Baseball History Nut, you live up to your name, no matter what language it is. You live up to your name as being a history nut, but it's been my privilege to finally talk to you. You and I, yes. we've we went back and forth, but you and I have never talked to each other before I hit record here today. So this was an absolute thrill. For everyone else, please go to the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app and go ahead and listen to all the different shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, where it really is your team every day. Talking across the border to where I hope will be the home of either the 31st or 32nd Major League franchise, my friend Mike from the Baseball History Nut. This is Locked On MLB. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.